Hi, I'm Lauren Klaas-Schneider with Class Notes for Broadway Radio. I'm here with Daniel Jenkins, a cast member in Kid Victory, presented by the Vineyard Theatre. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you in the context of your insanely busy schedule. Let's dive right in and talk about these writers. John Kander and Greg Pierce wrote Kid Victory. Talk a little bit about working with them as the piece developed.
Well, it was fascinating to watch them as a writing pair. They're incredibly generous with each other, as you might expect, but also very intimate. Nothing would be decided independently. They really were quite a unit, which impressed me and moved me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Greg is just a remarkably gifted writer, just as far as being able to capture speech, you know, which not everyone can do. and then fold that into lyrics. There mm-hmm. there are a few lyrics that just jump out at me as, you know, how have they not already been written, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, People Like Us is a song that Dee Rocchioli's character, Emily, plays, and I think her first lyric is, "People like us got sponges for sponges for skin," and I remember hearing that for the first time, just crying immediately.
But people like us got sponges for skin.
Yeah, yeah, and it was just this kind of encapsulated theme for how raw all of the emotions are in this piece, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then getting to be in the room with John Kander and watch him as if he was 20-something, discover, rewrite, be wrong, be happy to be wrong, be so game and the opposite of resting on any laurels he has every right to rest on. He obviously pulls his life force from the creative act, and being in the room with that is a gift for anyone, much less making us feel like collaborators, you know.
Wow.
So, come on, doesn't get any better.
Can you give an example of the John Kander, Greg Pierce working moment? And
well, they would do this thing where, you know, if there was a question about something, they would just kind of put their heads together and whisper in each other's ear. And not like, well, I guess there's a privacy element to it, but mostly it's not wanting to say something that the other person might not want to say. You know, it's what my interpretation was. Is this what you think? Is this what you think? This is what I think. This is what. And they would voice their opinions, certainly independently, but they would arrive together. And I found that very touching.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Well, what drew you to the material the first time you were exposed to it?
Well, I have children. And, you know, parenting is a tricky wicket for all of us. I think it's gotten more and more complicated as the world gets smaller and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think it's become, and there's a moment about privacy in the show. And that's a really difficult one to negotiate these days. As you try to, you know, shelter, protect, and empower your children, how do you do that, you know? And this particular environment in the show is even more sheltered. So the obstacle's even greater for my character.
Right. Talk a little bit about the relationship between your character and Eileen, your wife in the show, Karen Ziemba's character.
Karen is just so good in this role. It's, you know, she says, "I know people like this, people who who like to put things in a box and make sure they stay in that box. And that's one version of that character. But the other version is of a mother who is just doing her very best with the tools that she has. And she's confronted with an extreme situation. And doesn't panic, actually, you know, tries to keep a level head and do the best she can for her son. I think, you know, the relationship that I have with her is certainly complicated by the circumstance, the extreme circumstance that her son has gone through. But I think it has evolved over the years into those roles that you sometimes play in a marriage, where this is my territory and this is your territory. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little bit of a awakening for the father about those boundaries. And maybe after the play is over, he'll start to look at those more closely through the lens of the journey that his son has taken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an extraordinary journey that an audience member goes through, and you are such a huge part of the change, or how we can see that. The relationship that you have with Brandon Flynn, who's playing Luke, that character.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that relationship.
Oh, it just makes me cry to even think about it. It's really lovely. You know, we talked kind of as compatriots and fellow humans at the beginning of the process and about our lives. And Liesl Tommy, the director, was very smart and kind of not digging in too hard into the scenes towards the end, so they would just kind of reveal themselves to us. And I think they have, to a great degree. Our relationship as people, I feel, is one that I'll have for a long time, or I hope so. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you try not to poke too many holes in it if it isn't broken. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't start hitting it with the stick to see how it works, because it's working. I'm very moved by his presence as a kind and gifted performer, articulate actor, and just a great instrument that he uses to access all of this really intense material. And he also is very light of heart and giving. I feel very privileged to look into his eyes, finally, and to be able to listen, which is the thing he's kind of been missing, as a character anyway. Yeah.
Right, as opposed to as a person, an actor, right.
Oh, he's a delightful young man. We're going to see a lot more from him, obviously.
The world of Kid Victory is really quite haunting. Mm-hmm. For you as an actor, what's it like inhabiting that world every night?
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, I think maybe more than any other show I've ever done, I have no idea what the other side is like. No, it's such a unique kind of juxtaposition of music and story. I don't know how that's received, you know. And luckily, I don't. That's not my job. I think what makes this one unusual is that I have even less a sense of how it's going over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because every audience, of course, is quite different. And I think what comes across the footlights is certainly consistent, but also very different each night. It is. I feel privileged, mostly, is how I feel. And certainly when I get to do the scenes towards the end, I feel like in a way like I'm batting cleanup. Everyone has, you know, done all the all the heavy lifting, and I come in and I basically have to lay down a pretty clean bunt.
Well, or a home run, depending on how one might interpret it. Like a bit of a grand slam.
But it's the I would say as an actor I feel privileged. As Daniel I feel privileged. As an actor on the inside, again, it's so engrossing, it's hard to not just be right there in the moment as far as you know, my experience of it. And then afterwards, people have you know, these powerful reactions, and I'm very grateful.
I'm intrigued by a New York Times quote that describes the paralyzing mixed feelings of the characters. Respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to attribute that to Greg Pierce, because he has written something very complex. And as soon as you think something is black and white, you're given a new piece of information that makes you think differently. You know, the son's journey is not just one kind of a horror. It isn't just a horror story.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more complex. And the father has some information that he's been holding. That also makes his, you know, decision to talk a complex one. Yeah, there are great gifts that the writer has given us, which are secrets, you know.
Right.
And whenever there's a secret, everyone wins. The audience likes that. and the actor gets to... just hold it, you know, until it's released. Or sometimes it isn't. And I think really good actors, I hear, do that also. They just put one of those in their pocket, even if the writer didn't give them one. But Greg is really smart and really a craftsman, and has done an amazing job of that.
Talk a little bit about imagining the songs out of context.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I go back to People Like Us, the song that Emily sings, it's a short little song, and I feel like when I heard it for the first time, which was the first table read, it felt like an inevitable song. Like, this song, how is this song already not in existence? And I attribute a bit of that to Mr. Kander, because we have a feel for his spirit, you know, as a community.
Right.
But it's also his gift for writing melodies.
Yes.
And you go, wait a second, I don't already know that song?
Like he writes instant classic hits.
Right. And
that we should have known.
Yes. And so I've never been in the presence of that before, and that was super cool. And also, yes, so many of the songs do stand on their own as tunes and as stories, or as, you know, little mini journeys. Karen sings that song about, you know, where did this kid go? You know, where's that boy that
right.
I remember? I defy the parents to get through that one. Yeah, it's in such a specific and remarkable, dark and beautiful story. There's so many universal themes in these songs. Yeah, they know what they're doing.
I'd have to agree.
And the arrangements are just remarkable.
They are.
Yeah, yeah.
They are. And I feel like while the piece continues to develop, and, you know, who knows where it will go from here, and what the writers will do with it, and what its future might be, I certainly do hope that the album, an album is recorded.
Oh yeah, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I never think of those things until they say they're happening.
Well, yes, until
yeah.
there's that announcement and you read about it, and then
yes,
someone
right,
presents
right.
you with a day of work.
Yeah.
Well, we can be hopeful.
That's right, and I think honestly that's what you end up with at the end of the play too. You know,
mm-hmm.
even though you've been through a lot, you feel like, oh, there's a crack in the the dam is opening.
Mm.
And you know, I think John says that there's a great song for Luke right then.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Sure.
Well, this has been terrific, Daniel. I'm
well,
so,
thank you so
appreciative.
Much.
Well, thank you. I'm Lauren Clash-Schneider with Daniel Jenkins from Kid Victory by John Kander and Greg Pierce, presented by the Vineyard Theater. Thank you.